Hello, and welcome to the Space Coast Pet Podcast, the podcast for pets and the people who love them. Now here's your host, veterinarian Dr. Roger Welton.
Hello, pet lovers, and welcome to the Space Coast Pet Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Roger Welton, a.k.a. Dr. Roger, coming to you from the Florida Space Coast. Thank you for tuning in today. We have what I believe is a very relevant topic based on what I'm seeing in my clinic. It is based off of a listener email. So, Brittany, you have a whole episode dedicated to your email. Because our episode is dedicated to an email, we're going to do two emails today, and then we'll jump into the next email, which will transition me into the topic, which is designer breeds. So the the topic today, or the title of the show, is The Doodling of America. And so what I'm referring to is golden doodles, labradoodles. There's lots of doodles. I could go on and on about that. So basically, there's these designer breeds, mostly crossing a poodle into any number of breeds, and people are paying big money for them, although they're not AKC recognized breeds. And we'll jump into that in just a moment, but let's do our first email. Dr. Roger, I just purchased a golden retriever puppy, and my breeder was adamant that I must not vaccinate my girl for leptospirosis. She said that it is a very rare disease, and the vaccine has a high incidence of side effects. My vet did not agree and recommended the vaccine. I took my vet's advice, putting more faith in her degree and knowledge of medicine over the breeder, but I have compared notes with friends whose breeders also had similar stances against the leptospirosis vaccine. While I will always take the word of a veterinary medical professional over a breeder, I also feel where there is smoke, there is fire. Are you aware of any basis for this? For this and what seems to be a common breeder stance against the vaccine? Thanks. Sorry to bring up breeders. You have been more than clear how you feel about breeders. LOL. I love your show and look forward to every new episode. It is a perfect way to pass the time during my train commute to work each day. Kindest regards, Monica, Montclair, New Jersey. So Montclair, New Jersey, oh my goodness, that brings back memories. Monica, I went to Montclair State University for my undergraduate degree in biochemistry, and I also played lacrosse there for the university. And oh my, do I have great memories. Thank you for commenting, and I'm just having a rush of memories as we speak. So if you're commuting via train, I would gather you're probably commuting into New York City to go to work. It's a short train ride from Montclair State. Montclair State sits on top of a mountain, and it overlooks, you can see the New York City skyline from certain areas of campus. Just gorgeous. Anyway, thanks for the great memories, but let's get to your email. So leptospirosis, your breeder's wrong. It's not very rare. We see it. I see a few cases a year, and it's got a 30% mortality rate. So when you do see it, it's bad. And to treat it, you have to usually go to a referral center that's going to have isolation facilities. The disease is very contagious via the urine and is contagious potentially to people. It's what we call a zoonotic disease, meaning you can catch it from your dog. They have to be in isolation centers. Everybody handling them has to be in biological suits, and you have to wear safety glasses and masks and all that good stuff, and it's expensive, and they have a 1 in 3 chance of dying if your dog gets the disease. And here's the other kicker. Leptospirosis has an uncanny ability to live in wet environments for up to 7 days. So it's what's called a spirochete bacteria. It's corkscrew shaped, and it sort of swims in the water. It corkscrews through the water. It's a bacteria, and it causes liver and kidney failure when the host gets infected. So fresh standing water is our most common vector. So anywhere there's puddles, lakes, ponds. Certainly here in Florida, we have all of the above. There is the potential for leptospirosis to be in the environment. It is spread by the urine of rodents. So most commonly, it's the squirrel. So in my backyard, for example, I have a lake. I love my lake. I also have an oak tree. And guess who lives in the oak tree? Squirrels. And so I have the perfect recipe for the potential for the spread of leptospirosis. So my dogs are vaccinated for it. So let's get to your smoke with fire. There is some smoke and fire. Back when I first graduated, we were not routinely vaccinating for leptospirosis. We reserved it for more of our high-risk animals because there was a higher reactivity rate with the vaccine in comparison to other vaccines. So if you had a hunting dog or you lived in a particularly rural environment, my first job was on the North Shore of Long Island. So there was an area called Lloyd's Neck, this peninsula that kind of went off the coast just north of us. And people in Lloyd's Neck lived in very woodsy environments. Saw a ton of Lyme disease there as well for the same reason. And yeah, so some of those dogs would get leptospirosis, but we were very picky on who we decided needed them. Well, the case incidences kept going up. And so what we found was more and more veterinarians were increasingly considering a core vaccine. Where there's urban sprawl, where there's squirrels, there is leptospirosis. And so no, it's not the most common disease, but it's certainly on the rise here in Florida because we're all urban sprawling on steroids here right now, encroaching into natural environments. And by consequence of that, there was a time when I didn't vaccinate for lepto. Back in 2008 is when I started vaccinating for leptospirosis because I started seeing cases and I thought, you know, it's time. And also the reactivity of the vaccine was very well remedied by then. So back in the day, there was a company called Fort Dodge. Fort Dodge was not the most scrupulous veterinary pharmaceutical. If there was a vaccine to be had, they were the first knuckleheads to put out a vaccine. And as a result, they put out the lepto vaccine too soon without really doing their diligence as far as safety is concerned. And so it was not a deadly vaccine, but it definitely carried a higher reactivity rate. We knew it, but it was the only one available. Well, Fort Dodge, thank God, went out of business, and a lot of their products that they had got bought up by other pharmaceuticals. And so Pfizer Animal Health bought their leptospirosis line, refined it, made it better, made it safer. And so in this day and age, there are several pharmaceutical companies that make the leptospirosis vaccine, and they are just as safe as rabies. They're just as safe as distemper, parvo. Very relevant vaccines. I do consider it as part of my core vaccination protocol. And so you made a very good decision to listen to your veterinarian over your breeder. There are, you know, if you go with the major companies this day and age, so Zoetis used to be Pfizer Animal Health, you got Merck, you got Elanco, all those companies are putting out very high quality, very protective, very safe vaccines. So I am very confident in the safety of leptospirosis vaccine. I am not confident in leaving a patient unvaccinated. They legitimately die from that disease. So good choice there. So let's jump into the email about today's topic. Hello, Dr. Roger. I am a Labrador Retriever breed enthusiast and have a passion for showing my dogs all over the country. I also take great pride in breeding top-of-the-line Labrador Retrievers through ethical and responsible breeding. My breeding dogs have every health certification OFA has to offer. I would like to know your thoughts on this trend of designer breeds that seem to be sweeping the nation. I feel like every time I turn my head, there's another Labradoodle or other cross on my street. Do people understand that per the AKC and dog show circuits, they are purchasing very expensive mutts? No offense to mutts whatsoever, but if people are in the market for a mutt, why don't they just go to the pound and pick one out for a heck of a lot less money? Thanks for your podcast. I never miss an episode. And of course, I just love how much you love Labrador Retrievers. Sincerely, Brittany, Coral Gables, Florida. Thank you for this email, Brittany. Again, it's very relevant, and the whole episode is about your email. Fellow Floridian, appreciate that as well. And yes, I do love Labrador Retrievers, as everybody well knows if you've been listening to my program for a while. So, yeah, good point. Designer breeds are, I think I'm seeing more of those than I'm seeing AKC breeds, to be honest, with the exception of Frenchies. I gotta do another episode, the French bulldogging of America. They have actually overtaken the Labrador Retriever as the nation's most popular dog. They are also the nation's most unhealthy dog because of their popularity. We'll get to that in a little bit. So yeah, everything's a doodle these days. So the Golden Doodle, there is the Labradoodle, as you brought up, there is the recently saw a Sheep-a-Doodle, Old English Sheepdog crossed with Poodle, standard Poodle. Probably the weirdest one I saw was my best friend growing up in New Jersey, Steve Jordan. He's a trainer to the stars out in LA, so he's a California boy now, so I'm not surprised he went out and did this. He was in the market for a dog, and he found one. He flew to Virginia to get this dog, and flew back with the dog. It is a mini Bernedoodle. So not only did this breeder cross a Bernese Mountain Dog with a standard poodle, she then miniaturized it. So that's another trend. We got to talk about the designer breeds, the miniaturization of America as well. So think about this. You got a 100, about 100, 110, 120 pound Bernese Mountain Dog crossed with roughly a 60 to 70 pound standard poodle. That's going to probably give you a fairly large dog, okay? Anywhere between 90 and 100 pounds. And you're gonna then take that line and take the smallest of each litter, successive litter, and miniaturize them down to, ready for this, 35 pounds. So in order to accomplish that, you have to do a lot of selective breeding. Well, guess what happens with selective breeding? You get some unwanted stuff. And so this particular dog, she's really sweet. To be fair to Steve, she's a really sweet, cool-looking dog. But she's got some health issues. I can't disclose them because she's my patient, technically. So there's some issues there that shouldn't be the case. And so one of the things that I'd like to comment on with the designer breeds is that, yeah, Brittany's absolutely right. You're buying a very expensive mutt. And if you're okay with that, then by all means, enjoy your doodle of sorts, whatever it is. By the way, it's not just the big dogs, it's the little dogs too. I recently saw a Yorkshire Terrier toy poodle mix. It's called a Yorkie Poo. I also recently saw a Maltie Poo. So that's a Maltese standard toy poodle mix. So it's happening on all spectrums. There's even this one designer breed called the Teddy Bear. It is a cross of three different breeds. Don't ask me what they are. I've only seen one of them. But yeah, it just never ends. Where there's a market, there's going to be people looking to capitalize on that market. So one of the comments I'll make though is I'm going to talk about the doodles first, and then I'm going to talk about the miniaturization and reasons people should be careful. So when this trend started like 5, 7 years ago, I started to see my first doodles. They were resoundingly healthy. Really, really good dogs. They were fun. They're cool looking. They're unique. Now that we've had several generations down the line of doodles breeding to doodles, and we are away from that original cross, what we're finding is these dogs are experiencing what every other popular AKC breed has gone through, which is poor breeding practices leading to unhealthy and psychologically not good dogs. So they're skittish, they're very challenging to work with increasingly. I'm not putting a stamp on all of them. I'm saying this is increasing that we're seeing this. They're less healthy, they're prone to allergies, they're getting hip dysplasia, all kinds of genetic stuff because, like the AKC breeds, these quote unquote designer breeds are popular and people are paying big dollars for them. So every Tom, Dick, and Harry that fancies himself or herself a breeder is churning out litters without doing any diligence in making sure that these breeding animals are psychologically well, are physically well, doing the OFA stuff that Brittany does. OFA is the Orthopedic Foundation for Animals. It started off screening for hip dysplasia in breeding animals. It has now expanded to elbow dysplasia, eye certification, cardiac certification. If there is a congenital disease out there, OFA has the ability to test for it to make sure that we are not willingly or knowingly or unknowingly transmitting preventable congenital disease in future offspring. So, Brittany, I'm sure your dogs are amazing. So when I talk about my distaste of breeders, you're not in that bucket. You're in the 1% that does it right. You have show animals. I love show animals. They are the best dogs in the world. They are well-tempered. They are healthy. They are the example of what that breed should represent. Your Labradors, I'd love to meet them. I would love, love, love to meet them. At any rate, though, to that point, I recently had a wonderful experience. My daughter is a avid equestrian. She shows in what's called the discipline's called hunter jumper. So she jumps horses and she shows and she wears the fancy outfits, and it's really neat, and she's really good at it. So we went to this place called World Equestrian Center in Ocala, Florida. It's a sprawling campus. It's got conference centers. It's got a huge stadium arena where they host Grand Prix events. So that these are like Olympic level riders that come from all over the country to compete in Ocala. There's a sprawling Victorian hotel that you can get rooms at over with a view of the arena. It's got a big jumbotron. It's just so cool. And the arenas where my daughter competes are covered and air conditioned, which is magical in Florida. You can have a covered arena not air conditioned, and in the summer you're still suffering through the heat during these shows. So it is just so bougie, so cool. And what was really neat this last time we went is that there was a dog show going on in one of the huge conference centers. And so between my daughter's events, my girlfriend Jill and I went over to the dog show. She's a certified veterinary technician. And so we both absolutely love animals. And we thought it would be a really cool thing to go over to the dog show, because, you know, we watch the Westminster Dog Show on ESPN every year. We actually record it because we find it really fun. So we go over to the conference center, and there's literally hundreds of dogs. There's one area where they're getting groomed, and these animals are just standing there. You know, there's a blow dryer on them, and they're getting, you know, brushed out, and they don't even need a leash on them. They're just standing there like perfect little statues because they're so well tempered. And what blew my mind is all manner of breeds, even like your traditionally loud yippity yappity breeds like your Chihuahuas and Maltese and Yorkies and all that. I couldn't believe that you got all of these hundreds of dogs. Not one single bark the entire hour I was there. Not one single bark. There's competitions going on, you know, in certain areas where there's stations where they're actually actively showing. There's vendor booths. There's, like, again, like I said, the dogs over in the grooming area getting groomed. There's a practice area where the handlers are practicing with the dogs. And not one single bark. You have all this distraction, and these dogs are laser focused. Why are they like that? Because they're incredibly bred animals. Because they have to be bred for temperament. And that's a huge thing. You know, I see these doodles that are just skittish and just not happy dogs. They're terrified, and it's bad breeding. So when you inbreed these animals, whether it's a doodle, whether it's a Labrador, whether it's a Yorkie, you know, name your whatever, inbreeding's bad. It's just, you know, famously, the royal family, the European royal families, did a lot of inbreeding to keep their royal lines pure. Well, they created a lot of disease. The Victorian children famously suffered from hemophilia, which is a genetic disease, and that was created from too much inbreeding. There's a lot of mental health issues in the royal families because of that resulted. Many of us have seen the movie The Madness of King George. It was, I believe, King George III, who was notoriously insane. So that is the result of inbreeding. Autism can be the result of inbreeding. You know, like for me, physical health and mental health are just equally as important, because you want a well-adjusted, happy dog. And, you know, you're making this investment into a puppy. You know, some people are paying $5,000 for these designer breeds or more. And, you know, you have the expectations of having this wonderful life with this puppy, and you know, they're many of them are not happy dogs. They're skittish, they're terrified, you know, and people are spending a fortune on training and Prozac and all this stuff to just keep their dog reasonably happy after they already invested $5,000 into this animal just to adopt it. So, you know, my biggest advice to you is, you know, make sure you're doing your diligence with these breeders. Treat them no differently than you would treat a traditional breed, AKC recognized breed. Don't allow them to ruin the doodles or the minis. I'm going to talk about minis in just a second, but don't give them the opportunity to ruin these animals and saddle you with a future massive expense and potential tragedy because they're not healthy dogs. The minis are particularly concerning to me because to miniaturize something, you are taking the smallest examples of a litter very often the same litter, breeding them together to get a successive, now the successive litter. After that, you get the smallest ones of those, so on and so forth. So you get these little tiny examples. So the Australian Shepherd is probably the most common example I'm seeing of this, but I've even seen a mini Golden Retriever recently, and I was like, oh my God. So the mini Australian Shepherd, so a regular Australian Shepherd should weigh between 50 and 70 pounds. So you got these mini Australian Shepherds that are between 12 and 15 pounds. So they're breeding that big dog all the way down to this tiny little thing. And what you're looking at is, these tiny examples of these dogs, the smallest of the breed, tend to be what we call the runt of the litter, and the runts tend to not be that healthy. They're genetically defunct. They have issues, and so you're taking potentially the least healthy of the litter, breeding it to the least healthy of another litter, or maybe the same litter, and you're breeding them together. And then you're gonna keep going on down the line. It's just a powder keg for recessive genetic disease. So be very careful if you're in the market for a mini. Don't think that necessarily you're getting, for your 5 or 7 grand. A healthy dog, because just to get to that point, generationally, there has been a lot of inbreeding to get there. And I don't want to put a paint them all with a broad brush and say they're all unhealthy. They're not. I'm just saying a much higher percentage of them are unhealthy than we compare them to other designer breeds and other AKC registered breeds. So just do your diligence with the breeder. So the best advice I give to people when they're in the market for a particular breed, I don't work with breeders. As you all know, I loathe breeders. I just don't like them. And Brittany, you're not in that bucket. You're the 1% that I admire and actually love to see the results of what you create. I would love to meet your labs, like I said. I bet you they're just like those show dogs that I saw at the World Equestrian Center. But the vast majority of breeders are just not doing it right, either willfully ignorant or they're just unethical, horrible people. That's just the truth of it, folks. I'm sorry. But at any rate, what I tell people to do is go to the website of the kennel club of the particular breed that you like. If you like Labrador Retrievers, go to the Labrador Retriever Kennel Club and join their forums and ask them, hey, does anybody know of top quality breeders in my state? And you'll get pointed in the right direction. Now, when it comes to doodles, I don't know if there's kennel clubs because they're not AKC breeds, so don't quite know where to guide you there. But I will say, at the very least, hold them to the criteria that I would hold any breeder to, which is number one, we're not breeding before 2 years of age. Number two, we are OFA certifying at least hips. Three, we are making sure there's a pre-breeding examination on both of the breeding animals before they are bred. Number four, I want to meet both of the breeding animals. I want to make sure that they're healthy. I want to see their temperaments. I'm not meeting you at a gas station to purchase the puppy. That's shady. Big red flag there. Okay. And I want a state-issued health certificate for sale, which, by the way, in the state of Florida, you cannot sell a puppy or any animal without a veterinary state-issued health certificate signed by a licensed veterinarian. Can you believe that about 19 out of 20 puppies that I see don't come with a state-issued health certificate? Many of them have not been seen by a veterinarian. The breeders have given the vaccinations themselves. To me, that's a big red flag. You have a breeder given her own or his own vaccines, run for the hills. If you're selling a dog for $5,000 and you don't have you're too cheap to have the puppy seen by a veterinarian once or twice, wow, that's a special level of greed right there. Special level of greed. You're getting 5 grand for this puppy, but you can't spend $50 on a puppy visit and a properly administered vaccine using the AVMA and AHA protocols. So kind of went down the rabbit hole of breeders. I hate when I do that, but it bothers me to my core. I'm sorry, it just does. But yeah, just do your due diligence. Know that what's happening to these designer breeds is happening to, same thing that's happened to all of the popular AKC registered breeds. Bad breeders are creating bad, unhealthy dogs, and you know, just know that be especially careful with the minis because you are looking at a very selective breeding situation to get to that miniature size. And then lastly, just know, like Brittany said, you know, you're understand you're spending a ton of money for what is essentially a mutt. There's no representative doodle showing at Westminster Dog Show or even the event that I went to at World Equestrian Center, nor do I think there will ever be, because every time you turn your head, there's a new designer breed. As I said, we even have the teddy bear, which is three different breeds. So, you know, I don't think the AKC could keep up if they wanted to. So that's my show for the day. Thank you, Brittany, for that email that inspired an entire episode. Thank you, Monica, for emailing from Montclair, New Jersey, bringing back great memories and bringing up a really good topic. Folks, keep the emails coming. Who knows? You might create a whole episode at the very least. I'll read it on the air and give you your 15 minutes of fame. Have a great day, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in. Until next time.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.